are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm so good. Faye and I just had some delicious food.
It was an experience.
Yeah. So that's your hot goss. That's our hot goss.
It's our hot goss.
For the week. Because it was so fucking hot.
Oh my god. This is the hottest goss because I was crying.
I was crying.
I was sweating. It was a nightmare.
We were just like, took a bite. Like, couldn't do anything. Like, salivating.
It sounded like we were in labor.
Yes. Yeah. I kept breathing in. And then every time I'd breathe out, it was like hotter. So yeah. I just kept breathing in.
Surprised we weren't breathing fire.
I know. It was insane. Crazy. So they opened up this new chicken place, like, right across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Bird Call.
Ooh.
So we went and got the Nashville hot chicken sandwich because I used to live by Nashville. I've had Nashville chicken.
I can handle spicy stuff.
Yeah.
I have a Mexican grandma.
Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah. We're just two gals who like spicy stuff.
Yeah. So we ordered our food to go. We had a beer while we were waiting.
It was
so nice. They have the coolest, cups for cocktails, mm-hmm. right, and get this, because how do you explain it,
shaped like a birdie,
the cup was shaped like a bird,
yes,
and the hole that you drink out of was the bird's butt,
yes,
so, well, right, it was a cocktail,
it was at the end of the tail, not the actual butt.
I mean,
same thing. That would be weird if it was, like, down there and you had to...
Right. It was a cocktail.
Cocktail.
And, like, we didn't put it together until one full beer down, and I was like, it's a cocktail! it was so fun.
It was delicious.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna go back and get not spicy.
Yes. Some regular food.
Food that I don't have to cry about.
Oh,
it was so good, though.
Yeah. Well, happy Fearsome Fridays.
Yeah.
We are Unholy Gossip Girls. I'm Casey.
I'm Faye.
And we're here to bring you into part two of the Dan Cooper, a.k.a. D.B. Cooper case.
Dan Bartholomew Cooper.
So if you guys are listening to this episode and you have no idea what I'm talking about, go ahead and listen to last week's episode, episode 35. That one is all about the D.B. Cooper case, the hijacking, and everything we know about this guy.
It's very interesting.
And it's very long, so.
Strap in.
Strap in. And this one is going to be probably just as long. So... we can get started after. What are you drinking?
Well, today I'm drinking a random soda that I found in your fridge. It's called Big Red, and it tastes like bubble gum.
That's so weird.
The weirdest thing.
Yeah, Shirley brought those over. Thanks, Shirley.
It tastes exactly like bubble gum.
That's so bizarre.
Have you tried it?
I don't think I want to.
Okay.
I believe you.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Neapolitan milk stout.
Yum.
Yeah, I think I have this one and one more left. I just have a problem with buying, like, six packs and drinking, like, one and then buying another six pack and drinking one. So then I have all this, like, random assortment of beers forever.
It's a problem.
Yep, I'm going to try to drink them before I buy more. I say that every time.
Someday.
And then I get down to it, I'm like, oh, I don't like that one. And then I go buy some more. I will finish, I promise. All right, well. I guess let's
get into it.
Yeah, cheers.
Bubble gum.
Beer. Okay. So, for part two of the D.B. Cooper exclusive, we're going to talk about all the suspects, okay?
Okay.
All right. Not all of them.
There's one that I'm really wondering if you get into, and I hope you do.
I will explain what I meant by that. Okay. Between 1971 and 2016, the FBI processed over 1,000 serious suspects. 1,000.
Oh my god.
Who included assorted publicity seekers and deathbed confessors, but nothing more than circumstantial evidence could be found to implicate any of them. All being linked by no more than conjecture or extremely dubious claims of responsibility. We are going to go over some of the most liked suspects. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
I need a drink.
I'll strap in while you do that. Click. Click.
Mm. Did you look into your season passes?
I forgot.
We did that last time.
Oh my god. I'm gonna mail that to me.
Alright, so our first one, and I have pictures of each one. Kenneth Peter Christensen. In 2003, a Minnesota resident named Lyle Christensen watched a television documentary about the Cooper hijacking and became convinced that his late brother Kenneth, born 1926, died 1994, was D.B. Cooper. After repeated futile attempts to convince first the FBI and then the author of the film, director Nora Ephron, he contacted a private investigator in New York City in 2010. The detective, Skip, in 2010, all right, Skip Porteous published a book postulating that Christensen was the hijacker. Christensen enlisted in the Army in 1944 and was trained as a paratrooper. After leaving the Army, he joined Northwest Orient in 1954 as a mechanic in the South Pacific and subsequently became a flight attendant. Christensen was 45 years old at the time of the hijacking, but he was shorter, around 5'8",
and manlet.
Thinner. I'm 5'8".
You're not a man.
That's rude.
Sorry. Sorry to all the manlets out there.
And thinner at around 150 pounds. Christensen smoked, as did the hijacker, and displayed a particular fondness for bourbon, the drink that Cooper had requested. He was also left-handed, and they assumed that D.B. Cooper was left-handed by the tie clip that was applied from the left side. Suggesting that he was left-handed. That's stretching a little bit.
Really?
Christensen reportedly had purchased a house with cash a few months after the hijacking. While dying of cancer in 1994, he told his brother, quote, "There's something you should know, but I cannot tell you."
Oh, that's lame. I hate when people do that. Like, I'm having the worst day, but I don't want to tell you why.
That is such a high school girl thing to right? do. Ugh, high school girls are the worst.
We really were.
After Christensen's death, family members discovered gold coins and a valuable stamp collection, along with over $200,000 in bank accounts. They also found a folder of Northwest Orient news clippings, which began about the time he was hired in the 50s and stopped just before the hijacking.
Ooh.
Although the hijacking was by far the most momentous news event in the airline's history.
He didn't clip any of those.
Mm-mm. Christensen continued to work part-time for the airline for many years after 1971, but apparently never clipped another Northwest news story. Here is his picture next to the D.B. Cooper drawing.
Oh, I see it.
Yeah. So, I was doing this, so there's 13 total spoilers. As I was doing this and I was clipping the photos, I was like, that looks like this other guy. Like, I kept thinking I would have found the same picture. They all look alike.
Really?
Yeah. And you're going to notice also, whenever I'm talking about it, pretty much every single one of them worked it for the military, has some skydiving background. Like, the shit, it's like every single guy that looked like this that had that type of background was a main suspect.
Wow.
It's so weird. Yeah. I mean, look at this guy's ears, though. They're a little crazy. Oh, yeah.
Got weird ears.
Yeah. All right. God, in his eyes, he looks like he's holding in a fart.
He looks shifty.
He's like,
I have a secret.
Okay. This is the part where it's debunked. Research by Internet Web Sleuths later uncovered proof that Christensen did not pay cash for the house he bought after the hijacking, but had a mortgage on it, and it took 17 years to pay it off.
Wow.
17 years is a short amount of time for a house loan, let me tell you. The same search also uncovered proof that Christensen had sold off almost 24 acres of land for $17,000 per acre in the 1990s. Thus accounting for the large sum of money in his account at the time of his death. Sorry, the mid-1990s. I was like, whatever. The FBI is standing by its position that Christensen cannot be considered a prime suspect. It cites a poor match to eyewitness physical descriptions, a level of skydiving expertise above that predicted by the suspect profile, and an absence of direct incriminating evidence.
So what was his big secret then?
Who knows? He didn't tell him. He died.
My secret is, I'm dying.
And he's like in the hospital room. He's like, no shit. All right. What do you think about the first guy?
I think there's like so many weird things, like despite the house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, he didn't buy the house in cash, but...
Mm-hmm.
Still, the newspaper clippings.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
That's really weird. Maybe he was, like, so scandalized by that he never wanted to...
Why keep the old ones, though?
I don't know.
That's just...
Maybe he's just a weird guy.
He sounds like a weird guy, but I don't think he sounds like D.B. Cooper.
No, D.B. Cooper's way cooler.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Lynn Doyle Cooper.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. L.D. Cooper, for short. Born 1931, died 1999, a leather worker and a Korean War veteran, was proposed as a suspect on July 2011 by his niece, Marla Cooper. As an 8-year-old, she recalled Cooper and another uncle planning something very mischievous, involving the use of expensive walkie-talkies at her grandmother's house in Oregon. The next day, Flight 305 was hijacked. And though her uncles ostensibly were turkey hunting, L.D. Cooper came home wearing a bloody shirt, the result, he said, of an auto accident. Later, she said, her parents came to believe that L.D. Cooper was the hijacker. She also recalled that her uncle, who died in 1999, was obsessed with the Canadian comic book hero Dan Cooper.
Uh-oh.
And had one of his comic books thumbtacked to his wall. Debunked, the FBI announced that no fingerprints had been found on a guitar strap made by L.D. Cooper. 1 week later, they added that his DNA did not match the partial DNA profile obtained from the hijacker's tie, but acknowledged once again that there is no certainty that the hijacker was the source of the material obtained from the tie.
Hmm.
Here's his picture. That, I know it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
I don't think it's him.
No.
He seems like a hippie.
Yeah.
Hippies don't wear suits.
Nope.
All right.
Or drink bourbon. Or do they? They probably do.
I have no idea.
We'll have to ask one someday.
Number 3. Jack Caulfield. Bryant Jack Caulfield, born 1917, died 1975, was a con man, ex-convict, and purported government informant who claimed to have been the chauffeur and confidant of Abraham Lincoln's last undisputed descendant, great-grandson Robert Todd Lincoln Beckwith.
Beckwith.
In 1972, he began claiming he was Cooper and attempted, through an intermediary, a former cellmate named James Brown, to sell his story to a Hollywood production company. He said he landed near Mount Hood, about 50 miles southeast of Ariel, injuring himself and losing the ransom money in the process. Photos of Caulfield bear a resemblance. Here's his picture.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. Whenever you're just like a nondescript white male.
Yeah, they all kind of look the same.
They really do. All right. Photos bear a resemblance, although he was in his mid-50s in 1971.
Oh, wow.
He was reportedly in Portland on the day of the hijacking and sustained leg injuries around that time, which were consistent with a skydiving mishap. Debunked? Caulfield's account was reviewed by the FBI, which concluded that it differed in several details from information that had not been made public and was therefore a fabrication.
Too bad.
Also, he was in his 50s.
Yeah.
Like,
he couldn't have done that.
He could not have survived.
Really?
So, this one's interesting. Barbara Dayton. Ooh. Barbara Dayton, born 1926, died 2002, a recreational pilot and University of Washington librarian who was born Robert Dayton. So, I think she's trans. Which, good for her.
Good for
her. In the 20s. Faye made us bracelets.
Yeah.
Mine says gravy train.
Mine says good for her.
So, good for her.
Good for her.
In the 20s, that, or I guess she wasn't, like, born, like, growing up in the 20s. Maybe, like, the 30s and 40s. That would have been really hard.
Yeah, for real.
All right. She served in the U.S. Merchant Marine and then the Army during World War II. After discharge, Dayton worked with explosives in the construction industry and aspired to a professional airline career, but could not obtain a commercial pilot's license. Dayton claimed to have staged the Cooper hijacking 2 years later, dressed as a man to, quote, get back at the airline industry. Whose insurmountable rules and conditions had prevented her from becoming an airline pilot. They did not explain, but I can only assume it was because of her
gender.
Yeah. Dayton said that the ransom money was hidden in a cistern near Woodburn, a suburban area south of Portland, but eventually recanted the entire story. Ostensibly after learning that hijacking charges could still be brought. The FBI has never commented publicly, and she died in 2002.
Rip.
Here's her picture.
She looks nothing like him.
I know. Like, she's wearing, like, these really thick glasses, but maybe it's because she's about to get on that plane? I'm not sure. She only had, like, two pictures, and they were both outside of planes. Like, little tiny planes.
Someone likes planes.
She's like a horse girl, but with planes.
Plane girl.
Sorry. Okay, this guy, I'm going to show you his picture first, because I think he looks so much like the drawing.
He does.
Doesn't he look like, maybe...
He's got that little frog mouth.
Yeah, and his hairline.
Yeah.
His ears. His, like, he looks exactly
looks just like, it.
Like him.
Looks like they drew a picture of him.
Yeah. All right, this is William Gossett. William Pratt Gossett, born 1930, died 2003, was a Marine Corps, Army, and Air Force veteran.
Wow.
I didn't even know you could do that.
He's a triple threat.
Can't you? I thought you just, like, chose one.
Yeah, I don't know.
I didn't know you could, like...
Collect them all,
yeah. who saw action in Korea and Vietnam. His military experience included advanced jump training and wilderness survival. After retiring from military service in 1973, he worked as an ROTC instructor and hosted a radio talk show in Salt Lake City that featured discussions about the paranormal.
Kind of like us.
Kind of like us. In 1973. How cool is that?
He's our forefather.
I like him for Cooper, but let's keep reading. Gossett was widely known to be obsessed with the Cooper hijacking. He amassed a voluminous collection of Cooper-related news articles. Late in his life, he reportedly told three of his sons, a retired Utah judge, and a friend in Salt Lake City, that he had committed the hijacking. Photos of Gossett, taken circa 1971, bear a close resemblance to the most widely circulated Cooper composite drawing.
Absolutely.
Gossett's oldest son, Greg, said that his father, a compulsive gambler who was always strapped for cash, showed him wads of cash just before Christmas in 1971, so just after the hijacking. He speculated that Gossett gambled the money away in Las Vegas. In 1988, Gossett changed his name to Wolfgang and became a Roman Catholic priest.
Oh, like you do.
Which people interpreted as an effort to disguise his identity. The FBI has no direct evidence implicating Gossett and cannot even reliably place him in the Pacific Northwest at the time of the hijacking.
I still think it's him.
I think it's him. He looks exactly like him.
He really does.
Gosh, let's look at his picture again. Like, come on.
Twinsies.
And he had survival training. Like, he knew what he was doing, and we talked about in the last episode, like, people speculate that maybe he was really dumb or maybe he was really smart.
Mm-hmm.
This could have been a guy who was really smart.
Yeah.
You know? And not just a dumb guy who happened to make it.
Maybe he legally gambled the money away, and then the person figured out, like, oh, I can't use these monies. Mm. No, that wouldn't make sense, because they would just turn him in, right?
Maybe. Or maybe he did it, like, underground cockfights.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, I don't know. That the weirdest part to me is that the money was never spent.
Yeah. But also, if he gambled it away that quickly before they released all of the serial numbers.
Yeah.
You know?
But wouldn't the casino have found?
That's true. I don't
know. They would have recirculated it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe it's out there and we just haven't noticed. I'm gonna start checking all my money.
I'm sure people do. I'm sure people every day look at money because they're insane. Like,
yeah, me.
Yeah, he's my favorite for it.
Yeah.
All right. Number 6. Robert Lepsy. Robert Richard Lepsy, born in 1937, was a 33-year-old grocery store manager and married father of 4 from Michigan who disappeared on October 1969.
Mm-hmm.
His vehicle was found 3 days later at a local airport. Doesn't that sound just like John Lost? Like he left his car at the airport?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And a man matching Lepsy's description was reportedly seen boarding a flight to Mexico. Authorities concluded that Lepsy had left voluntarily and closed their investigation. 2 years after the Cooper hijacking, family members noted that Lepsy's physical features resembled those of the Cooper composite drawings, and asserted that Cooper's clothing was described as very similar to Lepsy's grocery store uniform. Nobody wears a suit.
What kind of fancy grocery store is that?
With a fucking tie clip? Like, no.
Whole Foods.
Lepsy was declared legally dead in 1976. There's no record of public comment from him or from the FBI. Here's his picture.
They got the ears, but...
Did you ever watch Boy Meets World?
I did not.
Oh. He kind of looks like the main guy from Boy Meets World.
Wait, I have a wondering.
Uh-huh.
So, they said, like, he went willingly to Mexico or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So why is he dead? Why is he legally dead?
I don't know. Because he disappeared in 69, and then they... I don't know. That wasn't that far after. Maybe the family did it for some closure?
Maybe.
Not sure. All right. Next is John List.
A good one.
John Emil List, born 1925, died 2008, was an accountant, World War II, and Korean War veteran who murdered his wife, three teenage children, and 85-year-old mother in Westfield, New Jersey, 15 days before the hijacking. He withdrew $200,000 from his mother's bank account and disappeared. He came to the attention of the Cooper Task Force due to the timing of his disappearance, multiple matches to the hijacker's description, and the reasoning that a fugitive accused of mass murder has nothing to lose.
It's true.
Yeah. After his capture in 1989, List admitted to murdering his family, but denied any involvement in the Cooper hijacking. No substantial evidence implicates him, and the FBI no longer considers him a suspect. He died in prison in 2008, and if you still don't know who he is, he was featured in our episode 32.
I think it was him.
I don't. Look at him. He doesn't even look the same.
He doesn't, but how interesting would that be?
Look. D.B. Cooper, John List.
God, he has so much forehead.
I know. I don't think it was him.
I'm choosing to believe it was him just because it's fun.
John List isn't that cool. He's insane.
Yeah.
For killing his whole family.
I just think it would be interesting, wouldn't it?
It would be interesting, but I don't think it was him. All right. Number 8. Richard McCoy Jr. Richard McCoy Jr., born 1942, died 1974, which was just 3 years after the hijacking, was an Army veteran who served two tours of duty in Vietnam. After his military service, he became a warrant officer in the Utah National Guard and an avid recreational skydiver. On April 7, 1972, McCoy staged the best known of the so-called copycat hijackings. So just a year after, he boarded United Airlines Flight 855, a Boeing 727 with aft stairs, so it's the same type of plane, in Denver, Colorado, and brandishing what later proved to be a paperweight resembling a hand grenade and an unloaded handgun, he demanded 4 parachutes and $500,000. After delivery of the money and parachutes at San Francisco International Airport, McCoy ordered the aircraft back into the sky and bailed out over Provo, Utah, leaving behind his handwritten hijacking instructions and his fingerprints on a magazine.
Dummy.
What a dummy. He was arrested on April 9th with the ransom cash in his possession, so he survived.
Wow.
And after trial and conviction, received a 45-year sentence. 2 years later, he escaped from prison with several accomplices by crashing a garbage truck through the main gate.
Wow.
Tracked down 3 months later in Virginia Beach, McCoy was killed in a shootout with FBI agents.
Well, that's too bad.
In their 1991 book, D.B. Cooper, The Real McCoy, parole officer Bernie Rhodes and former FBI agent Russell Callum asserted that they had identified McCoy as Cooper. They cited obvious similarities in the two hijackings, claims by McCoy's family that the tie and the mother-of-pearl tie clip left on the plane belonged to McCoy, and McCoy's own refusal to admit or deny that he was Cooper. Although there is no reasonable doubt that McCoy committed the Denver hijackings, the FBI does not consider him a suspect in the Cooper case because of the mismatches in age and description, a level of skydiving skill well above that of the possessed, that thought to be possessed by the hijacker.
And the possessed hijacker.
And credible evidence that McCoy was in Las Vegas on the day of the Portland hijacking and at home in Utah the day after having Thanksgiving dinner with his family.
Aww.
Here's his picture. I mean, I think it's similar, but...
I can kind of see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it was... It could have been him.
Yeah.
But how do you do all that and then go have Thanksgiving the next day?
Really? Like, and why would you do it twice? I feel like once isn't enough.
I feel like he was a copycat. Like, yeah. And that's all. To literally do the exact same thing, ask for the same thing, be on the same plane.
Yeah.
Like, you're just a copycat.
Copycat.
Because he realized that Cooper got away with it. He's like, oh... That dude, or girl,
that person
jumped out of a plane and has all that money somewhere.
Why can't I do it?
Yeah, I'm gonna do it. And escape prison. Like, that guy's pretty intense. All right, number 9. How you doing?
Good.
Sorry, just need some water.
I'm enjoying this.
I love all the pictures. It's very interactive.
Yeah.
All right. Sheridan Peterson. Such a cool name.
That is a cool name.
Sheridan Peterson, born 1926, died 2021.
Wow.
That's this year. That's
recent.
Oh my god, I love your shoes.
Thank you. They're waterproof. It's really warm.
I love that. Okay. Served in the U.S. Marine Corps during World War II. Investigators took an interest in Peterson as a suspect soon after the skyjacking because of his experience as a smoke jumper and love of taking physical risks, as well as his similar appearance and age, which was 44 at the time, to the Cooper description. Peterson often teased the media about whether he was really D.B. Cooper, but when pressed by FBI agents, Peterson insisted that he was in Nepal at the time of the skyjacking, and he died in 2021. Here's his picture.
I kind of see it.
Kind of. I mean,
he has bigger lips.
Yeah. I think it's because his mouth is open in his picture, and you can see his gross teeth. I'm like, that can't be him.
My guy didn't have gross teeth.
Yeah, he does have bigger lips, though. Gosh. All right. Number 10. Robert Rackstraw. Robert Wesley Rackstraw, born 1943, died 2019, was a retired pilot and ex-convict who served on an Army helicopter crew and other units during the Vietnam War. See ya. See everyone?
Yeah.
At Vietnam.
That's where they all met. You guys, let's all pretend we're this guy.
I was like reading through, doing my notes, that I was like, I felt like I just kept seeing the same thing over and over. And the same pictures. It's so weird. All right. He came to the attention of the Cooper Task Force in February 1978 after he was arrested in Iran and deported to the U.S. to face explosive possession charges. Several months later, while released on bail, Rackstraw attempted to fake his own death by radioing a false mayday call and telling controllers that he was bailing out of a rented plane over Monterey Bay. Cooper investigators noted his physical resemblance to Cooper composite sketches, although he was only 28 at the time, military parachute training, and criminal record, but eliminated him as a suspect in 1979 after no direct evidence of his involvement could be found. And he was 28. I think that's pretty telling.
When did he die?
In 2019, I believe. Yeah.
No. I don't think it should be illegal to fake your own death.
Oh.
That's just my opinion.
Well, why?
I don't know. Like, why not?
If it wasn't illegal, I think more people would do it.
Yeah.
I feel like that would just be chaotic.
It should be legal under special circumstances.
Like what?
Like if it's really funny.
Why would that be funny?
I don't know. Just like, what if I just like, hey, I'm dead. I call the bank. I'm like, hey, I'm dead now. I think that would be hilarious. I could start my new life under a pseudonym.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I just think it'd be funny.
I feel like that'd be chaos. All right. This one. 11. Walter R. Recca. Walter R. Recca, born 1933, died 2014, was a Michigan native military veteran and original member of the Michigan parachute team.
Ooh.
He was proposed as a suspect by his friend Carl Laurie at a press conference on May 17th. 2018.
Some friend.
I know. So this was after he died. He was proposed as a Cooper. In 2008, Recca told Lauren via a recorded phone call that he was the hijacker. Rekha gave Lauren permission in a notarized letter to share his story after his death. He also allowed Lauren to tape their phone conversations about the crime over a 6-week period in late 2008. In over 3 hours of recordings, Rekha shared details about the hijacking before they were publicly known. He also confessed to his niece. Here's his picture, by the way, before we continue. He's obviously older in this picture, yeah. But I don't see it.
I don't either, which
his,
sucks.
His cool nose is huge. Like, yeah. D.B. Cooper's nose is very tiny. Yeah. Looks like he, what's it called? Contoured.
Yeah. Maybe he did. He was the first Kardashian and just put highlighter down his nose.
I mean, you can contour your face to look like a completely different person. All right. From Rekha's description of the terrain on his way to the drop zone, Lauren concluded that he landed near Clay Elum, Washington. After Rekha described an encounter with a dump truck driver at a roadside cafe after he landed, Lauren located Jeff, can't say his last name. That's not even a word. Jeff, who was driving his dump truck near Clay Elum the night of November 24th, 1971, and met a stranger at the Tenaway Junction Cafe just outside of town. The man asked Jeff to give his friend directions to the cafe over the phone, and he complied. Rekha reportedly confirmed that Jeff was the man at the cafe after seeing a photo Lauren sent him. So, this guy was like, I had a talk with this dump truck driver, and then his friend was like, I'm gonna find this guy. And he found him. Like, 40 fucking years later. It's insane. Rekha, who died in 2014, was a military paratrooper and a private skydiver with hundreds of jumps under his credit. A direct contradiction to the FBI's publicized profile. The Bureau issued a statement that it would be inappropriate to comment on specific tips provided to them and that no evidence to date had proved the culpability of any suspect beyond reasonable doubt.
Wild.
Yeah. All right. Number 12. William J. Smith. In November 2018, the Oregonian published an article that identified William J. Smith, born 1928, died 2018, of Bloomfield, New Jersey, as a possible suspect. The article was based on research from an Army data analyst. Oh my god. Analyst. Who sent his findings to the FBI. Smith, a New Jersey native, was a World War II veteran. After the Navy, he worked for the Lehigh Valley Railroad and was affected by the Penn Central Transportation Company bankruptcy in 1970, the largest bankruptcy in U.S. history at the time. The article theorized that the loss of his pension created a grudge against the corporate establishment and transportation industry. It also created a sudden need for money. He was 43 at the time of the hijacking. The analyst claimed that Smith's naval aviation experience would have given him knowledge of the planes and parachutes, and that his railroad experience would have helped him find railroad tracks and hop on a train to escape the area after landing. The FBI responded to media requests with its usual boilerplate statement that commented about specific tips would be inappropriate. Here's his picture. His kind of sounds likely.
Yeah, he kind of looks like.
Yeah, kind of looks like him. He's the right age. He had a grudge against the transportation industry.
I'm so mad at trains, I'm going to hijack a plane.
He needed money because he lost his job. He was knowledgeable about planes and trains.
Planes, I like that it train. Says he can find tracks. Like, anyone could find train tracks. They look like train tracks.
I know, but maybe he knew where. I don't know. Like, if I landed somewhere randomly, I wouldn't be like, oh, there's a train over there. I don't even know which trains are still running.
Me either.
I don't even know that they do. I don't know. Yeah. Could be him. He's got the hairline for it.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. All right. The last one. Dwayne L. Weber. Dwayne L. Weber. Okay. Water.
Break time.
Mm. It's just so much talking. Okay. Dwayne L. Weber, born 1924, died 1995, just a few years after. Oh, no, that wasn't. Several years after. As a World War II Army veteran who served time in at least 6 prisons.
Wow.
For burglary and forgery. He was proposed as a suspect by his widow, based primarily on a deathbed confession. 3 days before he died in 1995, Weber told his wife, Jo, quote, "I am Dan Cooper," end quote. The name meant nothing to her, she said, but months later, a friend told her of its significance in the hijacking. She went to her local library to research D.B. Cooper, found Max Gunther's book, and discovered notations in the margins in her husband's handwriting.
He wrote, "That's a lie. That didn't happen."
The sketch, and he's like, "That's me." Jo then recalled, in retrospect, that Weber once had a nightmare during which he talked in his sleep about jumping from a plane, leaving his fingerprints on aft stairs. He also reportedly told her that an old knee injury had occurred by jumping out of a plane. Mm. Like the hijacker, Weber drank bourbon and chain smoked. Other circumstantial evidence included a 1979 trip to Seattle and the Columbia River, during which Weber took a walk alone along the riverbank in the Tina Bar area. 4 months later, Brian, that little kid, made his ransom cash discovery.
Ooh.
In the same area. The FBI eliminated Weber as an active suspect in July 1998 when his fingerprints did not match any of those possessed in the plane and no other direct evidence could be found to implicate him. Later, his DNA also failed to match the samples from Cooper's tie, though the Bureau has since conceded that they cannot say that that was actually his DNA. Here's his picture.
They have the same weird frog mouth.
Yeah. And it's hard to say about the nose because the picture of this guy, he's like at an angle.
The ears look giant, though.
Ears look, I mean, his ears are big.
Yeah.
He's got kind of the same hairline. What a weird thing to, how weird would that be to like have that be your deathbed, to be his wife, you know?
Yeah.
And then to go to the library and see his handwriting in a book, like, how fucking weird would that be?
I'm gonna do something like that on my deathbed.
It sounds like a movie. Like, it sounds made up.
It does.
All right. So, those are all of them.
Wow.
Before we continue, what do you think?
I still think that one guy with the picture that looks the most like him.
Let me find him again. Do, do, do. All the way up here. William Gossett.
He's my choice.
Yeah, he's my choice, too. He just looks exactly like the picture.
He really does.
Like, it's insane. I don't know how you would see him and be like, "Oh, that's not him." Like, no, that's fucking him.
It's totally him.
Oh, gosh. It's crazy. And I can't believe they interviewed, they had over 1,000
really
serious suspects. Like, can you believe it?
And he didn't even hurt anyone.
He didn't do anything. Come on. He never even spent the money. Like, nothing bad happened.
Let him go.
And they've just spent so much time and resources on this. And I get that it's, like, a fun, like, let's find treasure for, like, people like you and me.
Uh-huh.
But for actual, like, like FBI agents, like, why are you wasting your time?
Go find actual missing people who are
actual
in danger.
Missing people. Put our resources to good use.
Really.
All right, Let's go over the aftermath of all of this, other than pissing me off. The Cooper hijacking marked the beginning of the end for the unfettered and unscrutinized commercial airline travel. Despite the initiation of the Federal Sky Marshal program the previous year, 31 hijackings were committed in U.S. airspace in 1972.
Wow.
19 of them were for the specific purpose of extorting money, and most of the rest were attempting to reach Cuba, which I will talk about in our next bonus episode, because it's really interesting. In 15 of the extortion cases, the hijackers also demanded parachutes. In early 1973, the FAA began requiring airlines to search all passengers and their bags. In the wake of multiple copycat hijackings in 1972, the FAA required that all Boeing 727 aircraft be fitted with a device later dubbed the Cooper valve that prevents lowering the aft air stair during flight, which I don't know why you would even need that.
Yeah.
As a direct result of the hijacking, the installation of peepholes was mandated in all cockpit doors. This enables the cockpit crew to observe passengers without opening the door.
Wow, I didn't know they had those.
I didn't know. I thought all... I mean, it's just like a glass window. I thought they all had that.
Oh, I guess I've never looked.
Yeah, that's because they're... You never go up there.
I'm always in the back with the poor people.
Well, I'm always, like, right by the engine, and it's so loud. All right. In pop culture, this is kind of fun, Cooper's bold and adventurous crime inspired a cult following that was expressed in song, film, and literature. Restaurants and bowling alleys in the Pacific Northwest hold regular Cooper-themed promotions and sell tourist souvenirs. A Cooper Day celebration has been held at the Ariel General Store and Tavern each November since 1974.
Wow.
I wonder if they still do.
We should go.
Cooper has appeared in storylines of television series Prison Break, The Blacklist, News Radio, Leverage, Journeyman, Renegade, Numbers, 30 Rock, and Drunk History, as well as the 1981 film The Pursuit of D.B. Cooper, the 2004 film Without a Paddle, which is so funny, and a book titled The Vesuvius Prophecy. And in 2020, John Dower released his documentary, The Mystery of D.B. Cooper.
Wow. So if he wanted notoriety, he got it.
Yes.
If he wanted money, then
he didn't.
He failed.
Yeah, he did real bad. My sources are Wikipedia. I will try to post some pictures on Instagram. I guess I could post them all.
Yeah.
But that's it. I like that. I like the guy that looks exactly like him, but mm-hmm. I still think in my soul that he did not survive.
Yeah. He almost definitely died.
I think he died, and I think the reason why nobody ever found, like, a parachute or whatever,
mm-hmm.
is that somebody found him, like, maybe dead in a tree or something,
uh-huh.
and was like, oh, shit, and, like, took his money.
Yeah.
And then maybe later, it was, like, all over the news and stuff, and they were like, oh, shit, and maybe they, like, burned it or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Who knows?
But in Without a Paddle, have you seen that movie?
No.
It's a comedy. It's really amazing. It's about these boys who were friends in school, and then now they're adults, and one of their friends in their friend group dies, and he wanted to have all of them meet up in their, like, 30s or something to mm-hmm. go search for D.B. Cooper, because it was something they were obsessed with whenever they were kids.
Uh-huh.
So after their friend dies, they decide to actually go looking for him, and they find him, and he's, like, inside of this, like, I don't know, bunker buried into the ground
uh-huh.
in the woods, and they find his, like, skeleton and, like, the parachute and the money, and it's been all lit up and stuff, so he lit the money on fire to, like, stay warm.
Oh, wow.
And he still died.
That's probably what happened.
It's pretty, no. We're going to have to watch that movie. Yeah. I haven't seen any of the other movies. I have seen the show Prison Break.
I've seen Drunk History, and that's it out of all of those listed.
And 30 Rock, but I don't recall the D.B. Cooper storyline. I've seen Drunk History, but I haven't seen the D.B. Cooper episode.
Me either.
I love Drunk History. It's so
funny. My mom likes it, too.
Yeah, I haven't seen much, but I've seen at least, like, a few seasons.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good.
I love it. I love whatever they act it out, and the drunk person is, like, one of those people that says, or, like, a lot. Uh-huh. Like, probably I do. And then the person on the other end who's acting, like, mouths it. It's just so funny.
It's a great show.
They do such a good job. All right, well, what do you think?
I think he died. Yeah. For sure.
For sure.
Before he could even think about spending the money.
What do you think happened to his money and parachute and stuff?
I have no idea. Maybe he got, like, trapped in a crevasse or something.
Could have been.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's very interesting.
Maybe he jumped and then flew into the engine and got chopped up. And...
yikes. No, I don't think you could. I think they... that wasn't a plane that would happen.
Oh.
Yeah. I think the engine was, like, above... I don't know. They just said it was a safe plane for skydiving.
Oh.
Yeah. If you had to.
Well, I think he's dead.
I think he's dead. And even if he survived, I think he's dead now.
Yeah.
Like, there's just really no point.
Really?
In this weird search for him. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
All right, well, that was it. I hope you enjoyed that extremely long two-part episode.
I sure did.
Send us your theories. We want to know what you guys think.
Send us your deathbed confessions.
Yes. Before deathbed. Okay.
Yeah. Send them now.
Yeah. Might as well.
We promise not to report you to the FBI.
I won't tell anyone except for Faye.
And I'll tell my cat.
All right. Well, follow us on social media. We are Unholy Gossip Girls on Facebook and Instagram, at Girls Unholy on Twitter, and email us your deathbed confessions at unholygossipgirls@gmail.com.
Do it.
And we will see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.